Here's a new character, Iron Duck.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us for the morning open, a look at the broader economy as we start trading for the week. Just this past hour, Disney said it's picking up Marvel Entertainment in a $4 billion cash and stock deal. That's ahead. But first, let's ask, where's Wall Street? Markets are down right now. The S&P down more than 1%. NASDAQ down about 1.25%. And the Dow down about 0.9%. Shares in Europe mostly lower right now. And Asian markets took it on the chin today as well, with the Nikkei down about 2%. And we'll talk about the Chinese benchmark down about 7% as well, coming up with Sam Stovall, Chief Investment Strategist at S&P Equity Research. He's with us live from New York. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Steve.
First, let's start talking about this Disney-Marvel deal. I mean, we're talking a couple of big animators, publishing involved in this, too. What does this deal signify, do you think?
I think it's sort of a trend that a lot of publishers are having a hard time expanding their reach, particularly when most people on Main Street today are focusing more on the Internet than they are looking at magazines, newspapers, or comic books.
So, you know, when you talk about how much money they're investing in all of this, is this an internet thing, a digital thing? I mean, where are we skewing here?
I think what we're doing is we're taking time-tested characters within the comic book space, knowing that there is still some good interest behind those characters, and sort of lumping them in with other companies that have good pipelines, such as Disney, and so really just trying to merge two stalwarts together to make sure that they do have a future.
That they survive, yeah. I want to talk about the Chinese benchmark. It dropped 7%, nearly 7% today, and Wall Street a little nervous about that, and it's also the last trading day of August. Why are they cautious about what happened in China today?
Well, think of the world economy as one long freight train, and we have multiple engines pulling that freight train, and China right now tends to be the strongest engine at this point. And so with investors worrying that this engine could be sputtering, I think that's what's causing investors to be a bit jittery these days.
All right. Sam Stovall joining us from S&P. We do appreciate it, Sam. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Billionaire Warren Buffett says he wants to raise his stake in BYD, the Chinese electric car and battery maker. Shares are up 8%. Mid-American Energy Holdings, that's a unit of Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway, bought 10% of BYD last September for $230 million, sparking a massive rally in that stock. Could happen as early as this week. General Motors is in final negotiations to sell America's most infamous sport utility brand, Hummer, to a heavy equipment maker in China. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman wonders how different Hummer will look, Chinese style.
Not much, at least at first. Hummer would be owned by the Chinese, but the hulking SUVs would still be made in the U.S., saving about 3,000 autoworker jobs. Analyst George Magliano at IHS Global Insight says the Chinese are muscling into the U.S. auto industry for one simple reason.
American technology.
Magliano says the Chinese are on a crash course in car making so they can feed their exploding market and take on the world.
Companies in China get into the auto business left and right. They're looking to buy their way in and buy the expertise.
The change in ownership won't make much difference to Ray Sokolo either. He owns a Hummer dealership in suburban Boston. He says sales are down from their heyday, but as long as someone's making and marketing Hummers, he'll have buyers.
A customer that does an awful lot of off-road driving. The other is a customer that just wants to drive something different.
And doesn't mind driving around more than 6,000 pounds of steel that gets about 12 miles to the gallon. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
The Federal Reserve injected hundreds of billions of dollars in crisis loans into the U.S. banking system. The goal wasn't to make a profit. Turns out some of those loans are paying off nicely, though. Marketplace's Sam Eaton reports.
The central bank took in $14 billion in profits from emergency loans it made over the past 2 years. The loans were part of the Fed's effort to inject cash into the banking system when the mortgage crisis caused short-term lending to grind to a halt. The Financial Times says the interest and fees the Fed collected on those loans far exceeds what it would have made investing that same money in U.S. Treasury bills. But Standard & Poor's chief economist David Weiss says don't expect a government windfall.
This is only part of the bailout effort, and it was the part that was always likely to be profitable, because as long as the bank survived, you were going to get the money back with a profit.
Weiss says the Fed may not have it so easy when it comes to the rest of the bailout. Many of the banks it helped are still laden with toxic loans. And then there's insurance giant AIG. It received nearly $200 billion in government funds, and its survival is still in question. In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
An American businessman is at the center of a corruption scandal that could mean jail time for former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert. It's the first time in Israel's history a person who served as prime minister faces criminal charges. Olmert resigned last year amid corruption allegations. Daniel Estrin has more from Jerusalem.
Israel's state prosecution submitted a 61-page indictment against Olmert yesterday, charging him with alleged crimes committed in previous political posts. Those charges include fraud and failing to report income. At the center of one charge is Morris Talansky. The businessman from Long Island allegedly gave Olmert $600,000 in unreported campaign funding and gifts. In exchange, Olmert allegedly helped Talansky with his business affairs. The former prime minister is also accused of double and triple billing U.S.-based Jewish organizations and Israeli government agencies for flights he took to the U.S. and abroad. Olmert denies wrongdoing. If convicted, he could face years in prison. Talansky testified in Israel earlier this summer, but it is unclear if the country will seek to indict him in the case. From Jerusalem, I'm Daniel Estrin for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report from Monday, the last day of August, August 31st, 2009, at Marketplace.org. Today, the next Japanese prime minister started putting his government together. The Democratic Party trounced the current government in elections yesterday. Let's check in with Marketplace's Scott Tong, joining us from our Shanghai bureau with more economic reaction from Asia. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Steve.
So what did the ruling party do to deserve this big defeat?
Well, we've talked a lot about the Japanese economy's lost decade, right? Well, if you go back to the stock market crash in Japan in 1989 and start counting from there, that means Japan has actually had two lost decades in a row. And the incumbent party, the Liberal Democratic Party, has been running Japanese politics the whole time. Now, in their defense, they also oversaw the glory days of the rise of Sony and Toyota back in the 50s and 60s. But now, a lot of people in Japan feel like, you know, maybe the country's best days are behind it. You know, whether that's true or not is a debate, obviously. But this seems to be a vote for change.
So how does a new party, Scott, plan to turn the page here?
Well, they have a lot to deal with. Japan is one of the most indebted countries in the world. It's also one of the oldest. So the new party, which is going to name a prime minister before long, it wants to encourage people to reproduce. They're promising subsidies to families. They're promising free tuition in school. Exactly how they're going to pay for all this is still a we don't know. So it has a lot of challenges ahead of it. And don't look now, but China's GDP threatens to overtake Japan in the next 1 or 2 years.
And speaking of which, Scott, Shanghai stocks fell like, what, almost 7% today? Any connection with that?
No, at least not according to the market analysts here in China. Late last year, the Chinese leadership rolled out this great big stimulus package. You can think of it as a great big fire engine shooting water at the fire. Liquidity is what the folks in the markets call it. And in China, it comes in the form of banks lending a lot quickly. Now, the word on the street now is the economy has been resuscitated and the spigot's being squeezed quickly. And investors think that's going to hurt companies' profits and their company stock prices. I do have to tell you, Steve, that most American investors are not allowed into the Chinese stock market, so there may be no direct connection, but they certainly could be influenced by the mood out here.
All right, Marketplace's Scott Tong joining us from our bureau in Shanghai. Scott, thanks.
Okay.
Accountants in Britain have been poring over the books of the European subsidiary of Lehman Brothers, and they've just come up with a figure, $100 billion. That's how much they want the collapsed parent company here in the United States to pay creditors on the other side of the pond. Our man in London, Stephen Beard, has more.
When Lehman Brothers filed for bankruptcy protection in the U.S. a year ago, the bank's overseas empire fell apart. All Lehman's foreign subsidiaries were cut adrift. They're now separate bankrupt entities, and they've had to join the line along with other outside creditors demanding money back from the parent company. Liquidators for the British arm of Lehman Brothers think European creditors are owed more than $100 billion. Sorting this one out won't be easy, says Justin Urquhart-Stewart of Seven Investment.
In this very murky world of corporate finance, particularly as you look through the dust of this collapsed entity, it's going to be very difficult to unpick who actually has the rightful claims to these monies.
He says former British employees of Lehman Brothers certainly feel they have a rightful claim. Just before the bank crashed, the parent company moved $8 billion out of London to the US, leaving British staff unpaid. All claims against Lehman have to be filed within 3 weeks. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Well, the U.S. Open kicks off today in New York. If you're a tennis fan on a budget, you can get tickets for around $20. But a luxury box with in-suite catering, well, that typically takes a corporate budget. And with the economy still tanking, it's been a slow selling season. Sally Herships has more.
Typically, the best seats at the U.S. Open, you know, the ones in luxury boxes and courtside, are long gone by July, snapped up by big corporate sponsors looking to entertain clients. Not so this year. Chris Widmeyer works for the U.S. Tennis Association. He says,
we literally signed two last sponsorships in the last week leading into the U.S. Open.
Robert Tuckman plans events for Fortune 500 companies. He says there's still a lot of pressure on companies to avoid luxury.
Unfortunately, because of the fear of being, you know, called out, they've held back from spending funds on these different events.
Those who are buying less. J.P. Morgan Chase is one of the few Wall Street firms that's a sponsor. But it took a luxury box for 1 week this year, not two. I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Scientists recommend that we use no more than a half a teaspoon of salt every day, but most of us eat roughly two or maybe three times that much. One group is suing Denny's restaurants for not telling folks how much salt is in their food when they order it. Corb O'Connor reports on some menu changes that could be coming to a restaurant near you.
We all know that it's tough to eat healthy at a fast food restaurant, but the Center for Science and the Public Interest says some meals are worse than others.
A Denny's double cheeseburger has three times the sodium of a McDonald's double cheeseburger.
Steve Gardner is the center's litigation director.
Everyone excoriates McDonald's for selling junk. Well, Denny's has kicked McDonald's silly when it comes to selling junk.
Gardner says many of Denny's entrees have double or triple the amount of sodium we should have in an entire day. Now, there's nothing illegal about selling salty food, but the center wants to make an example out of Denny's to force more restaurants to put salt content on the menu. Denny's declined our request for an interview, but their CEO, Nelson Marchioli, did talk to WIND Radio in Chicago 2 months ago, before the lawsuit. He points out that salt is a big part of what gives food its taste.
Trying to reduce our salt content, it's kind of tough to get something to taste good when you understand that, you know, our meats, bacon, and sausage, those are cured, and oh my, they're cured with salt.
Denny's calls the lawsuit frivolous. Regardless of the judge's final decision about salt, restaurants like Denny's may still have to reprint their menus with other nutrition info, like calories. New York City now requires all chain restaurants to post calories on the menu, and other cities are creating similar laws. So the restaurant industry and members of Congress from both parties are pushing for a national standard. It might seem strange that restaurants want more regulation, but they do have their reasons, says Ellen Codiff, editor-in-chief of Nation's Restaurant News.
Rather than have a patchwork of different laws all across the United States, the chain restaurant group wanted to make it universal because they have restaurants, many of them, in all 50 states, and they felt that it's better to get out in front of this.
The proposed law is now wrapped up in one Senate draft of the health care bill. If it passes, the requirement would force chains with 20 or more restaurants to put calorie counts next to each item on their menus. In Washington, I'm Corb O'Connor for Marketplace.
Finally, some students at New York University have the opportunity to do some hard-hitting homework, strumming a plastic guitar or watching 90210. According to NYU, the class Guitar Heroes and Heroines examines video games and the nature of human cognition. The Poetics of Television course will delve into character development and plots of TV shows. There's even a class that'll teach about the exertion of aerobics. Now, some parents aren't happy with the courses because they think they don't teach what's important. And to tens of thousands of dollars a year for tuition, importance is in the wallet of the school payer. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being here. Hey, hope you can join us at our website, marketplace.org, and check out the Scratch Pad with our online host and blogger, Scott Jagow, inside our website, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great Monday.
American Public Media. be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.